Good morning. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And Joe Biden is credited with helping to write the original Violence Against Women Act as a senator from Delaware. It became law in 1994 and has been reauthorized three times since then, most recently in 2013. But in 2018, the Violence Against Women Act was not renewed by Congress and allowed to expire. Last week, President Biden reauthorized the legislation with a few new additions and a bit of bipartisan support.
No one, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, should experience abuse, period. And if they do, they should have the services and support they need to get through it. And we're not going to rest.
So what questions do you have about the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. Always email available to you, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest this morning, Ian Henderson, is the Director of Policy and Systems of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Ian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us this morning, Terry Poor, who is the policy director of the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Terry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Terry, I'll start with you. From your perspective, tell us what the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act means.
Yeah, it's so exciting, the progress that you mentioned in the opening. Just last week, the president signed the Violence Against Women Act into law, and it's about a 600-page bill with some really important provisions related to services and prevention of sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, and dating violence. There's some really new and exciting policy pieces, but there's also reauthorizations of the programs that, you know, we know that rape crisis centers and domestic violence programs in Wisconsin count on for the daily work that they do. And it was really a great example of how Congress can work together in a bipartisan way to move forward major legislation. So we're really excited about it.
And Ian, tell us about, you know, what it was like in the lapse without the Violence Against Women Act. What did that mean?
Well, I think one of the things that's important to know, and Terry talked about why reauthorization is so important. I mean, the funding that was appropriated continued. So it didn't mean, even though we didn't have a reauthorized Violence Against Women Act, it didn't mean that funding went away. But I think it's the reauthorization is important. And I know we'll talk more about some of the key policy initiatives that it contains, but it also is a signal, I think, to the country and to folks in Wisconsin that, right, the Congress and the president take this issue seriously and so committed to getting this important legislation passed and signed into law.
And as the president signed it last week, he said that the violence, when the Violence Against Women Act first passed, it did more than change the law. He said it changed the culture. And so I'd ask you first, Terry, has the culture around violence against women and sexual violence changed in the last 20 years?
I think it absolutely has. Look, we still have a ways to go, but I think we're talking about the problem of sexual assault in ways we didn't 20 years ago. Having done this work as an advocate for going on 30 years now, I just remember often having an experience of like sitting in an airplane or traveling somewhere and saying, talking about what I did. And it felt like people couldn't really talk about this issue at all at that point. But now I think it's really part of our national discourse. How do we solve this problem? And I think that, you know, we've seen some major changes in institutions and people really trying to figure out how do we prevent sexual violence, because we do believe prevention is possible. And what we know about culture change is that it's so important for our leaders to talk about these issues and embrace the change. So the fact that President Biden is, you know, from the highest position in our country, really talking about the importance of this, that in itself makes a difference.
So what's new in the Violence Against Women Act, Terry Poor?
Yeah, so a lot of exciting new policy provisions. One of the major ones is a reaffirmation of tribal sovereignty to prosecute non-Indian offenders of sexual assault, child abuse, and trafficking on tribal lands. And, you know, so we know that that this is so important because the rates of sexual violence against Indian women are so vast. And before this was passed into law, it's going to take a while for it to be implemented. But, you know, tribes weren't able, if there was a sexual assault that occurred on tribal lands, the tribe, and it was by a non-Indian offender, which happens with some frequency, then they wouldn't really be allowed to prosecute that case. So we just feel like in terms of accountability, this is a tremendous step forward.
And let me ask Ian here, who works with the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, this tribal sovereignty, what does this mean for your work here in Wisconsin, Ian?
Yeah, and I, you know, it's really significant. And I think, I know you had my colleague, who I'm really fortunate enough to work with, Justine Rufus, who's my colleague at Wakasa. She's also, I think she was on this program recently, also was the co-chair of the Wisconsin Department of Justice Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. And so when I just, you know, talked to her a little bit about this, I think she echoed and probably shared with your listeners, right, that this is a huge first step and undoubtedly a big win in expanding tribal sovereignty. And Terry talked about the rates. I mean, Indigenous women experience some of the highest rates of sexual violence, 3.5 times higher than other races. And as Terry talked about, many times, unlike other demographics, right, the people who are causing harm are non-Native. And so the ability for tribes to hold non-Native offenders accountable is really important. And I think, however, much work is still yet to be done. And I think that ties in nicely to the work in Wisconsin of the Department of Justice Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force, which has been meeting now for a little over a year, and will be developing additional recommendations to address that problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women, which is not limited to Wisconsin for sure, nationally. And you look in Canada, they've also addressed that. So I think more work yet to be done, and we'll be looking to groups like the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force, which are Indigenous led, which is really important, to propose additional recommendations to address that problem.
It's Ian Henderson. He's the Director of Policy and Systems of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Also joining us this morning, Terry Poore, who is the Policy Director of the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And we invite you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Is there a program or initiative that you know about that's reduced violence against women? And what can Wisconsin do better to eliminate gender-based violence? Be interested in your thoughts this morning, 1-800-642-1234. And Terry Poore, what is not in the Violence Against Women Act reauthorization?
Yeah, I mean, you know that in order to move bipartisan legislation through the United States Senate in a regular or sort of way, you need to get to a 60 senators voting to support it threshold. And so in order to do that, there was a lot of negotiation that happened by our very wonderful sponsors over the course of, you know, a number of years, actually. And one of the provisions that was really important to the advocates that didn't make it in the final negotiation was the provision that people referred to as closing the boyfriend loophole. And that would have prevented in federal law those who were convicted of domestic violence they could be prevented from having a firearm. And that it's called closing the boyfriend loophole because currently in federal law, if you are married, then the provision already exists to be able for a judge to be able to say someone can't have their firearms. But however, there's this loophole where if the partners are not married, the federal law currently doesn't cover that. But that was, you know, there were groups that opposed that provision. And as we were getting close to moving this forward, I mean, it just became clear that we wouldn't be able to get to the 60 vote threshold to get this through with that provision in there. But it did give us a lot of opportunity to talk about the importance of addressing domestic violence homicide. There are some great groups out there who are really focused on this issue. And so hopefully in the future, you know, we'll be able to do more.
Ian Henderson, are people in Wisconsin right now with domestic violence charges allowed to possess firearms? Do you know?
Yes, they are. I mean, the short answer is Wisconsin does not have a laws that would prevent or allow a judge to, as Terry just talked about, remove firearms for someone who's convicted of a domestic violence charge. What we do have, though, are firearm surrender provisions attached to domestic abuse injunctions, right? So if someone A victim petitions the court for a restraining order. In Wisconsin, they're called injunctions. The court, there are mechanisms for the petitioner to ask the court to have the respondent, in this case the abuser, surrender their firearms.
Ian Henderson, the Director of Policy and Systems of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Terry Poor, Policy Director of the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. As we look at the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act and take your calls and questions at 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the reauthorization and what's in it and what that means for Wisconsin? I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So the so-called boyfriend loophole remains part of the Violence Against Women Act as it was reauthorized last week. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and that was part of the compromise needed for the bipartisan support it took to get this legislation back on the books. What do you want to know about the details, the years-long process of getting this law back, and how this legislation may help to reduce sexual violence in Wisconsin? Police officers this morning, have you seen an increase in domestic violence since the pandemic, and how does your department respond? Are you trained in trauma-informed care? It's worth asking and would appreciate any response at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest this morning, Ian Henderson, Director of Policy and Systems of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Terry Poor, Policy Director of the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And Terry, about the police and their role in this, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act strengthens training for those in law enforcement and in the judicial system. What would this trauma-informed care look like for law enforcement and others that interact with survivors?
Yeah, we just know it's so important to have a real understanding of trauma when we're looking at a criminal justice response to the issue of sexual assault, you know, because I think historically we've seen very low rates of arrest and prosecution. And I think that's to a large extent because people expect a survivor to act in a certain way. And that's not always the case. We know that trauma impacts people certain ways, how they remember things, how they might approach or not approach facts and details. And so it's so important for law enforcement to understand that. But also we're really excited about new provisions in the Violence Against Women Act that provide some pilot projects with regard to restorative practices, because we know that while some survivors very much want to move forward through the criminal justice system, other survivors want non-criminal justice responses. So we think it's really important that survivors have a wide range of supportive options.
And Ian, in your work with Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, what role does law enforcement play?
Well, and I think, right, we've been fortunate enough to partner with the Wisconsin Department of Justice on their investigating sexual violence cases, training with officers. And so, for example, right, you know, we come in and help them as they're really doing, they do intent. I mean, their training is certainly based on an understanding of trauma, right? It's really, as Terry talked about, understanding the impacts of trauma on the human brain and how that impacts someone's ability to recall. And so that really helps officers guide their investigations, right? In terms of their first interaction with the survivor and then maybe waiting, for example, 24 hours before doing that comprehensive investigative interview. It also shapes the type of questions law enforcement officers ask, you know, asking sensory details for survivors. All of those things are really based on a trauma-informed response to sexual violence. And as Terry mentioned, right, for those survivors who do choose to engage with the criminal legal system, having a response that is geared in an understanding of trauma and then tries to adapt its response to making the experience and for survivors, as we say, trauma-informed, which is really just another way of saying, like, understanding the impacts of trauma on the human brain and designing a response that's much more victim-centered and can offer them choices and options in terms of engaging with the system.
I want to follow up here about Wisconsin, Ian, because last year, half of Wisconsin rape crisis centers reported a decrease in their funding, while at the same time, 75% of programs reported an increase in demand, and that's from the Rape Crisis Center survey. So what services from rape crisis centers are being shorthanded to make up for that imbalance?
Yeah, and I think what we've learned from that survey, and again, we're really grateful for our partnership with the Alliance, who sends out that survey. We were fortunate enough to really get a good response from Wisconsin programs. I think what we learned from that is a lot of that reduction in funding came from local and private funding sources. And so with that increased demand, right, what that meant for programs and therefore meant for survivors was waiting lists for particularly counseling services and support groups, right? And so I think with that increased demand, programs are facing a challenge, right, in terms of meeting the needs of survivors in Wisconsin, which is why it's really important that we have the Violence Against Women reauthorization with those increased funding levels. Obviously, we still need, there's work we need to do with state level funding as well. Federal funding is a huge piece of it. But we need to also look at how sexual violence services are funded in Wisconsin as well.
Ian Henderson, the Director of Legal and System Services for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, also joining us. Terry Poore, Policy Director, the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And we invite you to join us with your questions. If you've worked in a shelter, volunteered for an organization that has helped, we'd like to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. One of the aspects that maybe folks don't immediately consider when it comes to the issue of sexual violence and sexual assault is housing. And the Violence Against Women Act increases housing opportunities, as I understand it, for survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. Terry, what do we know about the relationship between domestic abuse, sexual violence, and homelessness?
Yes. Thank you so much for that question. I mean, we know that we don't know enough, but we do know enough to say that sexual assault is both a cause and a precursor of homelessness. And so that we know that a lot of times because people have experienced sexual abuse at home or, you know, in other ways that that can lead to housing instability. But that also once people are homeless or housing unstable, that can increase their risk for sexual assault. And so beginning with the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act in 2013, there was a recognition of the need to protect the sexual assault survivors with regard to their housing and go farther. So one provision relates to survivors of sexual assault in public housing who can who have the right to request a transfer to a different unit if they were sexually assaulted in the unit or it's a very traumatic experience for them. And then in this reauthorization, we're excited that the definition of homelessness has been expanded to really look at what's the real experience for sexual assault survivors so that homelessness service providers and rape crisis centers can work together more to meet the needs of homeless sexual assault survivors. In the survey you referenced before, we know that rape crisis centers see homeless survivors as some of the most unserved survivors of sexual assault.
Ian Henderson in Wisconsin, then what protections do survivors have to keep them from being evicted from their home?
Right. Well, so I think one of the existing protections related to for survivors is a prohibition on evicting someone because they are a survivor of sexual violence or domestic abuse. There's also some additional protections that allow a survivor to terminate their lease early, right? So we know that most sexual assaults occur at or near a victim's residence. And so it stands to reason, therefore, that many survivors may want to relocate after after experiencing sexual violence. And so existing law in Wisconsin allows a survivor to terminate their lease early if they can provide to their landlord a copy of an injunction, right, or a restraining order, like we've talked about earlier, or a copy of a criminal complaint. So those are pretty good protections. I think WCASA and our partners at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin have been working and lobbying in the legislature to try and expand those protections. Because for sexual violence survivors, right, many don't report to law enforcement. And even if they do report to law enforcement, that still requires the district attorney to issue a criminal complaint. And so that avenue may be not an option for sexual violence survivors. So they would have to get a restraining order, which means, you know, confronting their perpetrator in court and convincing a court and proving a court to the court grounds for a restraining order. And so one of the things we've been working on is allowing an additional way to terminate a lease early by having a survivor submit a written statement from an advocate at, for example, one of our rape crisis centers who would say yes, attesting to their belief that the person is a victim of sexual assault. We so far haven't been successful in getting that law passed, but you know, we did have a hearing in the Assembly Committee, Housing Committee this past session. We've had bipartisan support. So I think it's something we're going to continue working on at the state level.
Still more work to be done, even with the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. Ian Henderson, very much appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate you doing this call today and focusing on this topic. I just want to say real quickly, in addition to my gratitude for being on the program, is it's well-timed, not only with the VAWA reauthorization, but next week is April 1st, a week from today, and that begins Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So just want to remind folks to look out on our website and look for their local program for awareness and Sexual Assault Awareness Month activities in their community.
Terry Poore, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Well, it's great to be here.
Terry Poore is a policy director of the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Ian Henderson, director of policy and systems of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Listen, if you're experiencing domestic violence, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. 799-7233. We have a link to the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault on our website at wpr.org/mornings. That's wpr.org/mornings. Up next, news, then Wisconsin Life, then we enter the fray into the debate over daylight saving time. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn.